You are listening to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marge Regan. We're joined on the phone, as we are every Tuesday at about this time, by the former Republican candidate for governor in 2010, who will not tell us whether he'll be a candidate for governor in 2014. Welcome, Charlie Baker.
Good afternoon, folks. How are you?
Hey, excellent. Great. You know, Charlie, we were just talking before we started talking to you about teenage drinking in houses. There was a case down in Hingham where a bunch of kids got pulled over. Well, not pulled over. They were in the house drinking too much, allegedly.
Throwing bottles at the cops.
Yeah, not a good move to throw bottles at the cops, generally speaking. But you got three kids. I mean, it is hard when your kids are teenagers to monitor this stuff because, you know, once they get in the car, you can't always know what they're doing.
Yeah, the getting in the car thing, of course, combined with the alcohol, is like the worst of all possible scenarios. I mean, we did have one slight advantage, I think, which is both of our boys anyway. And our daughter as well, now that she's sort of coming into the age of playing varsity sports in school. You know, the boys were under this rule that basically if you got caught, you got kicked off the team. And I really do think, maybe this just makes me the most naive parent in the world, but I really do think that for the most part, it kept them away from a lot of what would otherwise be described as sort of alcohol-fueled trouble when they were in high school because they didn't want to lose their opportunity to play sports.
Yeah.
And it was more important to them than anything we could have said to them or anything that I think anybody else could have. And Lauren and I used to sit around and the kids would be over the house and stuff. We used to sit around and say to ourselves, you know, what's in those water bottles? Would we be incredibly bizarre if we went over and asked? And of course the answer to that was yes, and we pretty much trusted them. We made very clear to all three of them that the social host rules mattered to us and that we expected them to honor that and to recognize that if some kid gets drunk at our house and goes out and kills somebody or himself or herself, that's just not acceptable, period. I mean, it's like beyond not acceptable.
Yeah, I trusted my kids too. Then the older one, I found out later.
Okay,
what was going on?
Look, the job of a good teenager is to keep as much stuff away from their parents as they possibly can. You know,
I mean, Marjorie elevated that to an art form when she was a teenager.
I thought
Charlie.
It was amazing how fast the cross country team could run on Saturday morning after the night they'd had the Friday night before.
Hey, Charlie, let's talk politics.
Well, you throw it all up before you go to bed.
Exactly.
That's a beautiful image, Charlie Baker. Charlie, thanks. You served in the administration with a legendary lieutenant governor team, Bill Weld, Paul Cellucci, referred to often as Welducci because they were almost joined at the hip. What's your take on the stepping down of Tim Murray last week?
I think the lieutenant governor's job, for the most part, is considered by whoever occupies the post as an opportunity to have a shot at the big chair. And I think in Lieutenant Governor Murray's case, he concluded for one reason or another that wasn't going to be in the cards. And I think for him, this was an opportunity to go back to Worcester, where he's very well liked and very well connected, and into a job that I think he believes he'll be good at. And it's obviously not an opportunity that's going to be there forever, and therefore he took it.
Now, you're taking that position, the charitable position, because you're afraid our follow-up question is going to be Weld and Cellucci both left before their terms were over. You can't really – how can a guy midway – in the case of Paul Cellucci, I mean, we had this debate. Who did we have this with? Brian McGraw
the
other day?
No one is upset about this, but you, Jim.
I am the only one upset.
He's the only one. Go ahead. Tell
Devon
Charlie
Patrick,
why you're upset.
Who you ran against after Tim Murray spoke the other day, lists – 10 things, 10 hugely important things that Tim Murray is allegedly doing, and then bids him farewell in the same sort of charitable way you do. You don't think it's a problem when you're leaving, not even for another public sector job, for a private sector job with a $75,000 pay raise? What?
You didn't ask me what I thought about the fact that Governor Patrick used to pound my former bosses about the head and shoulders for leaving early and then didn't really seem to mind when his lieutenant governor left early.
That wasn't the question. What's
you
your reaction?
What you asked me. I'm a big believer that if you take the job, you should do it. That's just kind of my view of the world. Which is a different question than the one you asked me. And I'm a huge Paul Cellucci fan and the biggest Bill Weld fan you're ever going to find. In my heart, I wish they'd both served out their terms too.
But, you know, to me, it was totally different. When Bill Weld did leave, he left the government in the hands of Paul Cellucci. He had been up with the legislature for a long time, who knew
what
he
really was. They really were connected at the hip, and they were in on every decision together, and that's absolutely right.
And I think it was in Paul Cellucci and everybody right now, because he's dealing with ALS, and he's dealing with it so courageously and so bravely. I saw a picture of him in the paper in the Herald yesterday, and I thought, Paul Cellucci was always a handsome guy. I thought, here's a guy that's been dealing with ALS, and he looks as good as you can look dealing with this whole disease. But I was a little more upset when he left, because he left the government in the hands of Jane Swift, who at that time had like a six-hour commute, you know, 3 hours one way, 3 hours the other way, and three kids under three. So I thought...
And she was brand new to the job,
The other thing that's worth pointing out here is in Bill's case, he left to fight for an ambassadorship, and in Paul's case, he left to take one. They were both still pursuing public service initiatives at the federal level. I mean, in the case of the lieutenant governor, he left to take a job in the private sector, which I think is odd. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, at least you're closer to my opinion than most people here. Hey, Charlie, when you were running for governor a couple of years ago, was there ever a moment you contemplated referring to Deval Patrick as pond scum, or did that never enter your mind? Did you ever...
Explain.
Okay, for those who don't know,
Daniel Gomez was upset because Ed Markey, the congressman he's running against for John Kerry's United States Senate seat, ran an ad with Gabriel Gomez, who of course was a Navy SEAL, and in the same ad there was a picture of Osama bin Laden
on the screen at the same time. Both their faces. The argument was from the Markey campaign is that Gomez was the spokesperson for a group that was attacking the president, attacking Obama for politicizing the capture and killing of Osama bin Laden. But, you know, most of the people I've spoken to about the pond scum thing think it was a sign of amateurism on the part of Gomez, which suggests to a lot of people that while he may have a lot of qualifications or qualities that would make him a good senator, that really took the steam out of the Gomez movement. Where are you on that, Charlie Baker?
Well, it also could have been an example of authenticity that we rarely see in our scripted politicians. I think the biggest downside for it is instead of having 3 days to spend on why Gabe would be the right guy for the job in Washington and why Ed Markey's been part of the problem for 35 years, the media and both campaigns have spent the last 3 or 4 days talking about this.
I mean, well, actually, Markey hasn't talked much about. Hey, Markey has not talked much about it at all. I should say the press has talked a lot about it.
Well, it's irresistible.
Okay. Either way, but my larger point is still the same, which is that you know you get a limited amount of the public's attention and a little amount of and a special like this, it's even more limited. You know, you got to make every single issue and every single engagement be about something you really want to spend time talking about, and you just don't get. You don't get that time back. And I think that in some respects is probably, you know, the bigger issue. I mean, if I were Gabe Gomez and I haven't talked to him, what he wants to be talking about is bringing somebody to Washington is not part of the problem, right? And this is not 3 days he gets to spend talking about that.
Well, in defense of those of us in the media, I've got to say pond scum was a new threshold crossed, you know, and you just couldn't resist it because it was like, wow, that's a new term for your opponent.
I think the worst thing I got called was what I remember was Big Dig Baker by Tim Murray, the aforementioned Tim Murray. And I remember saying to somebody in the media when they asked me what I thought of that, I said, it sounds like the name of an ice cream.
That's right, Ben and Jerry's. Hey, Charlie, did you read Marjorie's column this morning?
I did.
You did? Oh, perfect.
Marjorie's column
this morning was about, well, why don't you tell us what your column was about rather than me telling
people?
Well,
it was about United States Senator Elizabeth Warren is proposed that student loan rates are about to double July 1st, going from 3.4% to 6.8%, and she wants to lower them to 0.75%, which is a savings, but it's only for one year.
One particular scholarship.
For the Stafford loans, Stafford loans. And my point in the column is that, as everybody knows, college costs are like totally out of control, and part of the reason they're out of control is because academics, as she was at the Harvard Law School, are getting these huge salaries. That's part of it, but it's a significant part of it, and I think she might be better off going after some of the salaries in academics rather than this tiny, tiny, you know, needle in the haystack, which is going to help a small number of people in small numbers of dollars as well.
I mean, but the other interesting thing about this, Marjorie, and again, I agree with Jim, I thought your column was great, is we're talking about a fight on the margin here. I mean, I have kids in college. I've watched all their friends and their families go through the agony of trying to figure out how to actually make this work. And, you know, a lot of families out there are, you know, remortgaging the house they just spent 20 years paying down the mortgage on, and the kids are taking out six figures worth of loans to get through school. And, you know, the big problem here is not, yeah, should the, would it be great if the interest rate on a student loan was lower? But the bigger problem is, you know, $50,000-$60,000 a year for 4 years is just too much.
So what's the solution? We all agree on the breadth of the problem.
Let's talk about that for a second. Khan Academy, okay? Sal Khan has created an online network. He has 40 employees, and last year his online network had 50 million students around the world. And this notion that you can't figure out a way to devise an accredited four-year program that combines the best of the online world with in-class teaching opportunities and cut the cost of college education by a significant amount and still deliver the same quality product, I don't buy it. Somebody's going to do it, and I can't wait to find out who it is.
So wait a second. So
that's really where somebody needs to go on this one.
And by the way, I'm glad you said a mix, because we discussed this with Karen Miller from Innovation Hub a week or two ago, and my worry was that Khan Academy, like things, while they're great, I don't want to see it end up being the province exclusively of low-income people.
I'm sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
No, I agree. But a mix makes sense. So how do you leverage that? What do you do if you're the president of the United States or you're a governor? Do you say to colleges in your jurisdiction, listen, you want federal or state funds, you got to do exactly what Charlie Baker just mentioned. Some mix that lowers the cost of tuition, if you do that mix, by 20%, by something. How do you make that happen?
You have to be willing to rethink the model in ways that up until now a lot of these folks haven't been willing to. And I think my own view on it is, between the money that the feds put on the table to support higher education and the money the states put on the table, there has to be a way to leverage some more creative thinking around this one.
What is it? That's what I'm asking. What is the, other than threatening to withhold federal or state funds unless you do X and lower tuition by Y, that's the only leverage I have, other than the bully pulpit, right?
Well, I guess what I'm really saying, Jim, is I don't know if I would put it in terms of quite as stark as the ones you've put it in, but yeah, directionally speaking, I think that's correct. I think the state and I think the feds ought to be coming up with ways to incent their partners in higher education to come up with less expensive and different ways of achieving the same objective. I mean, one of the things I love about the idea of mixing this up is, if you did it the right way, you could also create opportunities for a lot of these kids to be working while they were actually doing some of this online coursework, which would also help them with the larger question about how they pay for all
that. That's a great
idea. Yeah.
I mean, and when you think about an area like this, where there's like 100 colleges in Massachusetts, I mean, we have so much more leverage than a lot of other people do because of proximity. Proximity to downtowns, proximity to employers, proximity to technology. I mean, we should be, I know Harvard and MIT have been kicking this one around for a couple of years, but something's got to give on this, and it can't just be a couple of points on the interest rate on a mortgage, what's the equivalent of a mortgage that some kid's going to have to pay off over the next 20 or 30 years. I mean, that's not enough.
Well, you know, Charlie, one last thing for me. I wrote this in my piece this morning, but you've got college-age kids. You visit a lot of schools. I have, too. It's like you go to these cafeterias now, and they used to close at like 7 o'clock. Now they're open until 2 o'clock in the morning. They get sushi bars. They get Indian food. They got comfort food. They got Vietnamese food. It's unbelievable.
I was totally chuckling as I read your description of life on a college campus these days.
Hey, so, you know, occasionally we give you an assignment for the following week. How about by next Tuesday you come up with a couple of ways state and federal government could leverage their position on these university tuitions? Is that a deal?
I'm all for it.
I knew you would
be.
Charlie Baker, thanks. Yep. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Take care.
With that report. Yep. Can I just say one thing before we leave, Marjorie?
Certainly,
about
Jim.
Elizabeth Warren. I don't know why she's proposing the more narrow.
It's something.
Let me tell you what. Again, let me read into this for a second to attempt to be kind, because she's doing something.
Because it's banks.
Maybe her view is that you can't win the whole enchilada, so to speak. Let's get our foot in the door. Let's start talking about the obscenity that is college tuitions, and then maybe expand the scope, because something's got to be done. And I agree with you and Charlie. It's a small step. The Globe editorial page a couple of weeks ago said a similar thing, that it's a small step, but a small step is better than no step.
Well, it's also, she's a big anti-bank crusader, and one of her points is if the Federal Reserve will loan banks.
Anti-confiscatory bank crusader.
Yes. The big banks that a lot of people don't like very much these days, that if big banks can get money from the Federal Reserve at a 0.75%.
So should students.
I think that's a great point,
so
but
do
it just doesn't go far enough. Anyway, right now on a that's not it. This is a new study out of Germany. It says that being on Facebook puts you in a bad mood. I can totally relate to that. So is there an electronic antidote to that? We'll talk about how to get happy. You don't want to miss that. Coming up next on Boston Public Radio.
New York City launched a bike share program this past weekend. It's supposed to boost local commerce, but will it really?
They had to park a block away or someplace where they could park to bring deliveries there. They complain because there's no parking.
I'm Sarah Gardner. The bumps in the road for the Big Apple's big bike share. Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Tonight at 6 here on WGBH Radio.
WGBH programs exist because of you and Subaru of New England, introducing the all-new redesigned Subaru Forester with all-wheel drive. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. More information available online at SubaruofNewEngland.com. And Grogan & Company, fine art auctioneers, assisting New England families with the sale of their fine art, antiques, silver, and jewelry since 1988. Located in historic Dedham, Massachusetts, and at GroganCO.com.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio, Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Now, right now, how happy are you on a scale of, let's say, 1 to 10, with 10 being total euphoria? Well, want to be happier? Then you post happy thoughts, and it'll make your friends happier, too. At least so says the CHO. Do you know what CHO stands for, Marjorie?
What?
Chief Happiness Officer and that's what she is, and co-founder of the Happier app. Natalie Kogan. Nice to see you, Natalie.
Thanks for having me,
Thank
guys.
You for being with us, Natalie. So what, please, is the Happier app?
Well, the Happier app, very simply, I thought you did a great job. It's
you did
all
a great
about
job.
Helping you find and collect and share these very, very small happy moments in your everyday life, because the research says it's those things that make us a lot happier than big, epic life achievements or lots of money.
So we go to happier.com, right? That's where you go.
You can go to happier.com, or you can download the app for your iPhone.
Okay.
You can do either one. And you quickly create an account, and then you can do one of two things. You can browse small happy moments from the community. We have people from all over the world. We just had up to 700,000 moments shared in the last 12 weeks, and they're coming from everyone, and they're everything you can imagine, the smallest things. I just read a moment on the way here. The woman was really happy because she spilled coffee on herself, but not on her shoes, and she's going to an interview. So that's a small happy moment, right? We can all relate to that.
And you separate them into categories. If people want happy moments about friends or animals or whatever,
yep.
They can go check those things out.
That's right.
Right.
We call them collections because I think we're all collectors by nature. And so the idea is that, you know, based on the science, right, the idea is that you find these small things that are in your everyday, the good days, the bad days, the really awesome days. And by focusing on them, you start to validate to yourself that, hey, even the tough days aren't so bad.
What are some of the most common? But first of all, I looked at the team bios, the people at your thing. The one most commonly repeated, you know what the most commonly repeated thing on the list of five was?
Eating awesome food.
Eating awesome. That's exactly
right. I know my team. I know my team.
In addition to eating awesome food, give us a couple of examples of the things that are most repeated by people as making them happy in a small way.
Yeah, so themes start to emerge, right? And I think they're intuitive, but really awesome to see. So appreciating friends or appreciating others is a huge, huge
theme.
That's
a good one.
And it's a great one because, you know, I spent a couple of years looking at happiness research that inspired this, and doing nice things for others or sharing positive things with others is scientifically proven to make you happier. We don't tell that to the users, but we're seeing that emerge. That's a huge category. Eating awesome food is definitely up there. And I think one of the great things is, you know, there's days when you just rush through and, you know, you have that cup of coffee or a bagel, you don't think about it. the users by using Happier, it becomes a moment for them, right? It's something that you pause for a few seconds. A lot of sports, being outside, getting fresh air, a lot of that. And then kids. This is really fun. We haven't done a percentage of how many are parents that are using Happier, but a lot of really fun moments about kids.
Now, Jim, you have a favorite phrase that you always like to quote.
I borrowed it from you, actually.
Well, not that one.
Oh.
I was going to get another one first. The Roosevelt quote.
Yes.
Why don't you share the
I often use that in speeches. Alice Longworth Roosevelt, who was a Roosevelt, once said, "If you don't have anything good to say about anybody, come sit right next to me." And now, and why I match that up with Marjorie has often quoted the great Gore Vidal, who was asked by a reporter a couple of decades ago, "What do you do when you read one of your best friends, who's a great writer, has a book or a project that is a total disaster?" And he said, "My heart leaps with joy." And so,
you guys are just the happy bunch.
No, but your research suggests, I think I saw this on your website, that you posting happy thoughts, three small happy thoughts a day, is going to make a consumer of that information
happier.
15% happier.
Yes.
Is that what happened to envy and all those sort of things? that have caused all the problems
it's very
on Facebook.
True. It's actually a great point. So, first of all, it's based on the research that was led right out of here. A Harvard professor called Nicholas Christakis, who's actually an advisor to Happier, he pioneered the research that happiness is contagious, that if you connect with more positive people, you'll be more positive. So that's where the research comes from. But there's also, and I heard you guys talk about in the intro, that there's studies that come out that Facebook makes you miserable. And the reason that is because we brag, right? We curate this awesome life on Facebook. And then you're looking at my awesome life and you're like, oh my God, well, you're comparing it to your real life. I think the difference is that in a community where the expectation is that everything that is shared is positive, a lot of that goes away, right? So when you come to Happier, you know everything is shared as positive. And I think the other big piece, what we found is these happy moments, they're small. They're really, really small. It's the anti-brag side, right? And that's the whole focus that, you know, when I go on Facebook and I'm like, well, I was on the radio show today and Boston Magazine did an article on Happier and I'm so cool. That's what I would maybe post on Facebook. My moment in Happier, you guys should go look and check up on me. It's not going to be that. It's going to be like, you're actually making me smile. Like, it's really fun to hang out with you. So it's the smaller things that we're asking users
to do. Well, you know, the other Facebook things, everybody hates Mark Zuckerberg. That's the other thing.
Yeah. But you know, it's like the Christmas cards that people send out when they give their report, the annual report on the family. Yeah. I really hate the ones that say, and Susie's going to Harvard.
Yes.
And Johnny got a Fulbright scholarship. I like the ones that say, well, my husband left me for the babysitter, and, you know, I mean, my kids didn't get in anywhere, and we can't afford the car. I mean, it's almost like you want to call that person up and say, oh, good, because let me tell you what happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, misery loves company. Is not
but she's
a good,
saying happy.
But happiness loves company too.
But if it's not the bragging kind.
Yes, and that's the community we're building. And that was, by the way, guys, so we've been out for 14 weeks, right? So for an internet company, it's a huge amount of time. For normal life, it's really short. And the big question we had were, what are these happy moments going to be like? And I often say, you know, I've built a bunch of products. I often say, your product is not what you say it is. It's what your users say it is. And the content we're seeing, these happy moments, they are these small little moments. And the beautiful thing is, you know, the other big question that I'm expecting you guys to ask me is, well, can reading all these small happy moments, can that actually fundamentally change your life, right? Because that's what we're out to do.
Do you want to ask that or should I ask that, Marjorie? Why don't you ask
I think Natalie just asked it herself.
Okay, go ahead. What's the answer
Great.
To the question?
I've been trained in interviews. You
You're
post
doing
your
quite
own
well.
Question.
What's the answer?
Well, the answer is yes, right? And the example I'll give, and this is, you know, I'm grew up in Russia, forever a New Yorker at heart, but I'm really falling in love with Boston. And so this was amazing. During the marathon, right? So when the tragedy happened, we were at the office and, you know, we started freaking out, right? Friends running, et cetera. I opened Happier and all of a sudden there's a flood of happy moments about Boston. And you'd wonder, what can be a happy moment when the worst is happening? They were tiny. They were, just heard from my brother, thank God he's okay, or really inspired to see the volunteers running to donate blood. And we saw a flood of this. And then on the flip side, we started seeing people saying things like, just signed up for my half marathon in Florida, gonna do it for Boston, right? And the point is, even in the face of tragedy, right, these small, tiny, happy moments emerge and make you be more positive. The other flip side of it, we get these unbelievable emails from user. Just one I read last week where her grandmother was going through brain surgery and it was really touch and go the whole time. And she wrote us to say, your app saved my family. And we said, how? And she wrote this whole email to say that she just kept looking at the small positive things that people were sharing, tried to share a few of her own, and that got them through. So the point is, it actually can fundamentally impact.
Our number is 877-301-8970. We're talking to Natalie Kogan from Happier, the Happier app. By the way, one of our colleagues had a great slogan for you.
I like
you want to hear what this is? You
yes.
can steal it. Don't worry, be happy. What do you think about that?
Nice.
That's Chelsea.
Nice.
I love brilliant.
Hired.
I love that.
Hired.
But we want to know if you're buying the whole Natalie theory here that posting a couple, what is it, three a day of small.
We try to get it to three. It doesn't have to be three.
Small yeah. happy moments is not only going to make you feel better, but would you feel better if you read other people's small happy moments? Give us a buzz, 877-301-8970.
Oh, I think it absolutely does work. I mean, I was just looking at the set that this morning, the woman saying, oh, I had a great walk with my dog yeah. this morning. Oh, I Skype with my friend for an hour. Oh, my kids smile on the swing. Of course it works. You read about this. I mean, other people, you know, have talked about this too. The gratitude makes you happy.
Right.
And the whole mindfulness movement.
Yep.
What is the mindfulness movement? Isn't that sort of related
well,
to this?
Well, exactly. It's, I think, a synonym for what we're doing, right? Because the point is, and the way we think about it, that before you could have these days where everything is routine. And what we're trying to get you to do is on every day, try to elevate a few things that were routine
yeah.
and make them a happy moment, right? So, you know, I was running over here. Of course, there was traffic on every possible street there, but an awesome song came on Spotify. And so instead of my usual method would be like, oh my God, I hate this traffic. What actually it turned into was like, okay, this traffic is really awful, but there was a great song that came on, right? So the idea is that these moments don't have to be epic. They can be really small, but the point is be mindful of what's happening in your life because there's small good things in there.
You know what I'm smiling at? It's making me smile every time you say the word awesome. I smile on an average day. How many times, Natalie?
No, you guys read my bio. It's the word. No. It's on my Twitter handle profile. I overuse the word awesome and I wear orange every day.
She has an orange ring on, by the
way. I do have an orange giraffe
on. It's a great ring. How'd you get into this?
Into happier, orange, or awesome? Which way?
Happier.
Happier. So I'll give you guys a short radio story. So I grew up in the Soviet Union and then we immigrated as refugees. We're Jewish, so we tried to get out. It was kind of awful there. And in many ways, I say happier began in the refugee camps in Vienna, where life was as bad as you can imagine. We had nothing. We didn't know where we were going to end up. And then it took us many years to kind of get on our feet, welfare, food stamps, all that. I emerged out of that saying, I'm going to chase the American dream because look at what my family went through. An American dream to me was to be happy. And the way you got there was you achieved a lot of things and made a lot of money. So I spent 20 years achieving a lot of things. I went to top firms, consulting, venture capital, became one of the youngest women VCs, went to McKinsey, started companies.
Wow.
Ran the consumer division here of a company called Ware, helped to sell it to PayPal, you know, did kind of, you know, married the right guy, had the right stroller, drove a Mercedes, lived in New York, like did all this stuff. And then 20 years later, you know, was really satisfied with a lot of my life, learned a lot, really appreciative, but was exhausted and not happy at all. And so started looking into happiness research and had kind of this eureka of I've been doing it all wrong. And I think many of us are that I thought it's the happiness is what comes after. You do all the epic things, you make a lot of money, you marry the right guy, you achieve, then you're happy. It actually doesn't work that way. It actually is right here in every day, right? And so I read all this research for 3 years and then got inspired to start happier. And my tagline, as my personal tagline, has always been life is short, collect experiences. And so that's what it's all about. It's collecting these small positive experiences.
Do you want to get rid of the Mercedes or no?
I got rid of it.
Oh, you did. That's
great. I drive a, you guys should know, now that it's full disclosure, I drive a Mini that's fully wrapped in orange with our logo on it.
Oh,
if you see me
great.
Around Boston honk, I'll give you a sticker.
Fair enough. Let's start with Will. You were in Boston and you're all with Natalie Kogan from the Happier app. Hey there, Will.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Great.
You know, about happiness, I think it's an incredibly important aspect to focus on. I used to be on medication for depression when I was younger. Things weren't going really well for me, and it was really kind of a paradigm shift for me personally to focus on happiness as a focal point of my life. That, in fact, choosing consciously not to be sad, choosing to focus on the positives, really has changed my life for the better. I find myself medication-free. And every day, sometimes it's hard to get out of bed, you know, but if you just think about those great things that are going to happen every single day, then it makes life seem to shine quite a bit more.
That was quite
very
beautiful,
impressive.
Will.
Jim, this could be a personality changer for you.
I don't think so. you know what is true? You wrote, or somebody wrote on your site or somewhere, I don't know where it was, that smiles are also contagious.
Yes.
And I am cynical about everything, including this, I mean,
to begin with.
But I'm looking at you, and I realize she's smiling. I'm looking at myself about something I'm not even bought into, and I'm smiling.
So do you know what it
suggests,
is?
What is it?
It's science. So there are neurons in your brain that are mirroring mine. This is what they've shown about smiles. You can't help it. I mean, you could be a really grumpy person when you're looking at someone who's smiling. These things called mirror neurons fire in your brain and tell your brain to release endorphins. Now, fake smiling, there's a lot of studies that show fake smiling doesn't work long term, but this is not fake smiling. You're actually using all the 42 muscles in your face.
I'm going to have those neurons removed at the nearest. Hey, Will, thank you for a great, great call.
Let's go to Joe in the car. Hi, Joe. Are you happy?
Hey. Yeah, I am. But as I told you, screen up. I grew up in Charlestown. I had an uncle that did life in federal prison, and when my older brother was sentenced to 20 years for manslaughter back in the late '60s, my grandmother grabbed together every penny she could and sent me to a Catholic school in Wyoming. So any day I'm above ground and on the other side of those walls.
Okay, so is perspective we need, Joe? Is that what we need? More perspective.
Well, I will tell you this, if you can, it's not what you go through in life, it's how you react to what you go through in life that's important. But I'm not a technologically adept person at all. I'm not on LinkedIn, I'm not on Facebook, I'm on none of those things. I have a very successful business in the process of selling in my early 60s. Such that my problem in life is I have to worry about estate taxes after I die, which I view as a problem at all. But I will tell you the most important thing that I ever learned in life when I was starting out as an adult in my mid to late 20s, I met with an older fella from Brookline who was a Jewish fella, and I'm obviously Irish Catholic, and he taught me a trick, and I have religiously done it since then.
What is it?
At the end of the day, I sit down and I write three brief notes, positive notes, either a sympathy note to somebody who's going through a tough time, a thank you note to somebody who did something good for me, a congratulations note to somebody whose kids, positive things have happened. Mm-hmm. So I figured out, waiting on hold here, I've written about 30,000 of those.
Wow.
Notes.
Wow.
Well, it's a variation on a theme. Joe, we're losing you. There's a bad connection, so my apologies. We've got to let you go. But that is essentially a variation on your deal, Natalie, is it not?
It's great, and I'm smiling. Maybe I'll try to talk to your producer to reach him after. That's exactly part of it, right? So these moments, a lot of these moments, they don't all have to be about you. They can be about someone else. And then we do this thing where we've just started doing, it's getting huge reception, where once a week we'll do a little happier challenge. And so one of the ones we've done, and we just suggest for an action to take that can become a happy moment. So we did one about sending a small gift to a friend or a colleague or someone in the family, and there was awesome reaction on that. Again, the whole point is it's connecting mindfulness, but also connecting with people, right? It's a social product for a reason.
You know, it's also the writing down or typing the thing. I'm thinking as Joe's speaking, as you were speaking, when you were in school, I don't know if this was the same with you, when I was in school, the only things I ever remembered were the things I wrote down.
Yes.
It sort of reinforced
right.
it in me.
Right.
And I'm thinking that maybe it's the same deal. Even if you have these happy experiences, I'm becoming bought in, Natalie. Even if you have these happy experiences and you just live them and move on to the next one, they're not sort of cemented. Is the theory that if you write them down or type them or post them, that it provides more emphasis for the happiness?
Absolutely. So one of the studies that's widely talked about is they had a bunch of people literally write down on a piece of paper three positive things about their day for 21 days. And then they went back to them 3, 6, 9, and 12 months later. It was a huge increase in positivity, optimism, reduction in stress, but it was because they actually captured them. Right. And the way I think about it is, you know, lots of things happen in your day. You need to have the emotional, I call them the emotional bookshelves, where you have to capture these things, right? And they can be emotional bookshelves for different things. We're trying to build emotional bookshelves for happy moments.
You know what those emotional bookshelves are, Natalie?
Tell me.
Awesome. Now, let me ask you, is this free?
All I need you guys is to wear orange and then I've done my job.
Is this free? This
is free.
So how do
it
you make money?
It is completely free. Well, don't make money. Money doesn't make you happy.
No, I'm serious.
She's a venture capitalist working at McKinsey for all those years. Yeah. She's loaded over there, I bet.
No, not at all.
So how do you make money? How will you make money?
The way we'll make money in different ways. So we're not going to throw advertisements on people. Probably the first couple areas is letting people create keepsakes with their happy moments. We already have users asking us to create calendars or books or subscription service that sends you postcards, or you want to send them to your family, right? So my parents and my mother is listening. She just texted me. This is an epic moment,
great, guys.
It's a happy moment for me. My mother is not, she's a classical pianist. So being text-heavy is not her thing. She literally texted me. But imagine having a subscription service where once a month, she and my grandparents and my dad could get a nice little book of my and my husband's happy moments that include me, right?
That's
so keepsakes. We're also looking a lot into branded products. We're building something really fun and engaging. Users are asking us to create products that can say, you know, yoga makes me happier, t-shirt, et cetera. So lots of thoughts.
There you go.
Let's take one more call here for Natalie Kogan. This is, we're going to Pam in Worcester. Pam, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Jim, Marjorie, and Natalie Kogan. Hey there.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. Thank you for the call.
I'm happy pretty much every day. And I just wanted to say I have a grandson who was diagnosed with Asperger's about 6 years ago. And obviously it's been difficult, but as he progresses and matures, every tiny little step is a moment of happiness. And
that's
I just
neat.
Wanted to share that.
That's
Pam, you were
neat.
Great.
Pam,
that was great, Pam.
Thank you very, very much. What are you happy for today, Jim?
What am I happy for?
I know what you should be happy for.
I'm going to have an awesome lunch. I am. No, I'm thinking when I read down those lists, a lot of the things that are on the list of your team or whatever they're called there over there at the Happier app are things that it is small stuff. What are you looking at me like this, Marjorie? I'm not going to be my cynical self today.
I brought you tuna fish.
You did?
I did.
That
you,
made me
well,
quite happy.
You already ate it.
You know what made me even happier? When you brought the tuna fish in, Marjorie usually says I have to leave half for her. Today she said I could eat the whole thing.
Well, you know what you
doesn't
guys are doing right now? Do you know that?
That
anticipating experiences is actually the bigger part of enjoying them than actually
that's
having
true.
Them? So that's what you guys are doing. Look, you said you're about to have an awesome lunch. Now I want some tuna fish.
Okay, so you're halfway through the day. Before we say goodbye to you, Natalie, what so far would you have written down? If you had to do your three based upon your day up until 1:43, what would you have written?
Okay, so the one about my mom texting me
that's
in the middle
one.
Of a live
that's
radio
great.
Show.
That's
guys,
great.
This is huge. That's a big one. Two was meeting you guys for real. This is a lot of fun. I do a lot of speaking and stuff. Not all of them are fun. This is fun and maybe converting a cynic a little bit.
A little
I know
bit,
you'll
yeah.
forget. Just a little bit.
What's three?
Three would be getting up this morning. I do a 3 mile walk every morning at 6 a.m. It's kind of my meditation. This morning I woke up. I was exhausted. You know, those weekends off with kids are exhausting. So I was about to close my eyes, go back to sleep. I said, no, I'm going to do it anyway. Came back, was much better off.
3 mile walk every morning. I think that's it because then you can look at the flowers and you can look
it's
at the.
It's all, you know, in the air. You go,
yeah.
So those are
now,
my
do
three.
You take your phone with you in the 3 mile walk?
I do, but I only listen to music and I don't answer emails.
Oh, okay.
Pretty
that's
good.
Pretty good.
Hey, Natalie Kogan, this is great. The Happier app. And how do people find it again, please?
Happier.com.
Happier.com. It's great to meet you. We'll see
nice
you again
to meet you guys.
Soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thank
Thanks
you very much.
You guys are awesome.
Awesome. We're
we
having
are.
A very awesome day. It's going to be more awesome because of the Happier.com and the Happier app. That's how you get it, by the way, right? You go to Happier.com and look up the
download the app.
And download the app. Thank you very much, Jim. Okay. Up next, sort of continuing in a kind of spiritual, happy phase, I guess, or section of the show, we got a spiritual and visionary artist who is also an auto mechanic. The owner of Aladdin Auto Services is going to be here with us up next.
Reporting a rape in Pakistan can lead to more punishment for the victim than for the accused.
She's an outcast. She will never get married. She's destined to be killed by someone from her own family because she's impure now.
But one young woman is speaking up anyway, all the way to the high court. We'll talk with the filmmakers of Outlawed in Pakistan. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is made possible thanks to you and the Massachusetts Teachers Association, reminding everyone that adults play an important role in encouraging children to read. Reading is the key to success, so read to your children every day and encourage them to love books. And Mass Eye and Ear. When ear, nose, and throat problems affect the way you experience life, experience the difference Mass Eye and Ear can make. Visit masseyeandear.org for more information.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy, Marjorie Egan. How many people do you know who are both great sculptors, visionary and spiritual artists, as Marjorie said, and fine auto mechanics? Well, if you want to see such a person, you have two choices. You can travel to Aladdin Auto Service in Fresh Pond in Cambridge, or if you just want to hear him, you have come to the right place. Welcome to Boston Public Radio. I'm going to try my best to get this right. Mahmoud Reza Kamalabad.
Perfect.
Was that good?
Perfect.
Now, let me tell you, I thought that Natalie Kogan was the happiest person that's ever been in the studio. She can't hold a candle to you, Mahmoud. What's up with you?
I believe the sense of the happiness is a stage of the mind and the realization in life. It's not something material always is changing the form and unstable. But the only things we can create the happiness is to realize and understanding the, how the life works. And the life works based off the spirituality. When the God created the heaven and the earth, it means a space and the matter. And this relationship between understanding the space and the existence of the matter, because if the space does not exist, the matter is not able to be exist.
By the way, every auto mechanic I've ever spoken to has said the exact same thing. I want you to
know. I'm glad. I love them. Another my brother. Do you know? It's important things to realize in your environment, because everybody, they are looking to the materialistic life of the happiness. Because the material always is a continuous changing, so they are not able to reach the final point of their happiness. Their happiness is within the spirituality body, and you have to go within the body. But when you get to the body, you realize something above of the material life, which is the spirituality, which is the heaven itself, which the God created first. So basically, daily, you have to look up. One of the problems is the people, they start to think, and everything we take within the body, it has a release position. Mm-hmm. It goes out. But the one thing does not go is a thought of the human mind. And they start to orbiting. And this orbiting caused the conflict between the spirit and the body. So to release that one, you have to look up. As what you see, all the source of the light is to the ceiling.
And that's how you pray, with looking up and with your
arms
up into the air.
Exactly. You have to exercise the... Somebody from MIT, they came to me and they made some gadget for their watch, looks like the watch, and they told me this one, when you wanted to have a memory, remembering, you put it to certain times and beeps. I said, this one should be used for the people to remind them to look up.
Okay, so here's the deal. You got the auto service place out in Fresh Pond, and then inside there you have all your sculptures.
Yeah.
And then you also have the spiritual part of your life. So you're combining all these things. What are you doing with these sculptures? They're made of steel. They're huge.
I have a philosophy how the body has a development, physically development, and also spirituality has a development in the body. And through this spirituality development in the body created a different religion. So everything is related to the four elements, is the water, is the soil, the fire, and the air element. So all of them is connected, the spirituality related to these four elements. So basically, when I start to look to the problems, I start to materialize that one. Because you have to bring your thought to the form of the material until you can, when the God says to be, it to become. So you have to form that spirit of what you think to the material until you can prove your goal and your idea to the public. Because I believe the education is the significance of the development of the spirituality.
Can we get back to, I want to start at the beginning here, if we can, for a couple of seconds. I read about you that you have a film degree from Emerson, and then you got a PhD. How did you go from that to sculptor to the head of Aladdin Auto Service in Fresh? How did all those things get connected, Mahmoud?
When I had two kids and I was driving a taxi and I was doing my PhD at Boston University, and my subject was understanding the concept of the interference, which is the wave and the pattern and also a space.
Mm-hmm.
So I could not do it because I left the home 4 o'clock in the morning and I went home by the 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So every time when I leave the house, the kids, they were asleep. I came back home, everybody was asleep. So I sit in front of the Charles River and I start to pray. And I said, God, what am I going to do? And he said, look at all that this car is coming and going. One of the things of receiving the information, your conscience has to be clear and clean. When your conscience is clean, because we are in contained of the body, universe, we are in contained form. We are not open space. We are all in one space. So the signal can transfer and we can receive and we can send. So by asking what I'm going to do, I receive the information. Fix the car. Look at, they're coming and going.
So wait. So you're an artist, you're a sculptor, you have a film degree.
Yeah.
You were sitting on the Charles.
Yeah.
Speaking to God about what you should do about your predicament, your kids and that sort of thing. And God told you to look at the cars on Memorial Drive. Yeah. And that's what led you.
I was crying, Jim. Difficulty. You look up, you talk to the God, and it is directing you. So who I am to finding what I need, what I'm supposed to do. But when he said, fix the car, I looked at the car and I said, be a mechanic? I look up and said, if you want it, I will. So I dropped the PhD and I start to go to the many schools, high schools, General Motors to that time, they had a school in Dedham, Mass.
Wait a minute. So you did not know how to be a mechanic?
No.
So you had to start from scratch, learning how to be a mechanic.
Yes. Okay. And after that, I start to look to the General Motor. They had in Dedham, the school, and I start to go every often, drive the taxi, fix the people's car on the sidewalk, parking lot. And I know all the area, which is a little space, give it to me, change the oil of the cars of the people. I had no idea what the God has a mission for me. And I start to do the what I received, and I start to respond to that focusing. So when I finished, we were looking to the space, because my house was in the 52 apartment in the one building. And I had a little storage on the basement, so all the tools I gather was there. Slowly, tools developed by itself, and I need a space. My wife, she find the Marianne, she find a space for me. I rent the space without no experience about opening the business. I opened the garage.
You opened the garage yourself.
After 5 years, yes.
After 5 years learning how to be a mechanic.
After 5 years, yes.
You opened it behind the cinemas in Fresh Pond.
No, originally I made it in on Ringe Avenue.
Okay, on Ringe Avenue. And you were able to support your family as a mechanic and get home at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
So you
don't sell
your
art. But one of the things I also read is your art. You don't sell it. Is that correct?
One of the things, Jim, my work is related to my mission. My mission is unite all the religion. And I believe my work has a value based off my education, off my philosophy. By just selling the piece of the artwork, I don't think is a very important thing. My piece of my artwork is related to my philosophy, how all the religion is connected to each other, and they have a relationship, and this relationship brings the peace, humanity, and security.
So you want people to come, and people can come see your work
at
the Aladdin Auto Service. That's where you display this,
correct?
Yeah,
I give the cookie and the tea from 9 o'clock to 6 o'clock every day is open.
So wait a second. You give people refreshments. They can see your artwork for nothing. And what if they want to do that, but they don't want their car fixed? They just want to see the work you've done and have a cup of tea.
Yeah, it's a gallery is a one side. And the mechanic is one side.
And these are big, huge pieces made out of steel. And you've got sort of a thing with the Judaism and Christianity and Islam all kind of together in these artworks that
you do. If you look into the religion, you have to look to the idea of the language, because the language is the sense of the transforming information to the present time as a spirituality form we received. And if you're looking through Old Testament and New Testament and Quran, before that, what was the source of the information came to the biblical information was a Sumerian. The Sumerian is the source of all the angels, all the God, idea, philosophy of the heaven and the earth. All comes from those people.
Yeah.
In Iran, in the Hamadan is a cuneiform language. It says,
is that where you're from, Iran?
Correct.
You are.
Yes.
Okay.
It says, I am the God. I created the heaven and the earth and the people and happiness for the people. Is a very important thing.
One last thing. In addition to your sculpture, I'm going to come see it, by the way, in the next couple. I'm dying to see this.
Yeah,
maybe even have my car fixed. I know
open
that. Plus, you get tea and you get crackers or whatever he's doing. I mean, I saw you on some Chronicle video on YouTube where you were strapped to some machine.
Correct.
Spinning around in circles. What is that?
And upside down.
How does that fit into your whole thing?
Yeah.
Like in a toboggan. It's like you're strapped into a toboggan
and
you're upside down.
It throws you up and down and spins you. What's that about, Mahmoud?
Jim, the idea of the healing the body.
Yeah.
We can have a chemical reaction, radiation, operation, but still all those has a limitation. I believe the holy man wants to heal someone. He has to have a knowledge of transforming that knowledge to somebody else, they can do the same job. It's not something I can touch this one and it will be healed and it will be fixed without knowing how. I believe technology and the idea of the science can help that one. So when we look to the material and the space, material is unstable, therefore is moving to the space to gain some energy to continually, to balance itself. So as orbiting, we see that all the planets moving. This moving of the planet is the idea of the creating the balance. So human body has a vertical and horizontal experience. We do not have a space relationship to understanding. So when we are able to rotate the body to the spherical form, because the sphere is the final form of the space relationship, when we are able to create a balance mental and physically in the body.
So we know you're...
Wait a minute. Can I do this at home by like doing a shoulder stand, or do I have to be moving?
Move. The idea of, for example, when you cook at home, right?
Yeah.
You put all the ingredients into the pot.
Yeah.
Okay? Heat is there. Everything is there. Until you don't store...
Stir it. That's a very good point.
Okay? Is the sense of the balancing.
Okay.
It means the movement. Everything chemically.
You look totally stirred, Michael. We only have a minute left. Let me ask you something. So we know you're a great sculptor because we've seen your work.
I'm 62 years old.
Whatever
look
you
at,
are.
He looks great.
Mahmood, okay,
he looks
so
great.
We know
whatever he's doing.
You're in touch with the Lord. You're in touch with your body and the universe. We know you're a great sculptor. Are you a decent auto mechanic or not?
I'm a very good one.
Do other people say you're a very good one?
You can go to the Yelp.
And what do they say
Yelp.
About you?
You can go to Yelp and look at my record. I try the best as I can. When the people, they come to me, I look to their car as it looks like my own self.
I bet you do.
Okay, and do not, because through spirituality, whatever is outside is you. You have no concept of the exterior separated from you. Because you, people, they have a, because you don't have a time. People, they are orbiting, but they are not able to entering. All the spirituality is through entering. You go to the source, and you to become as everything.
This is the most
bring
upbeat
your car,
40
Jim.
I'm going to do
bring
this.
Can I sing? Can I sing? Can I sing?
Yeah,
absolutely.
But I'm going to say Mahmood Razai Kamalabad.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And
okay.
Aladdin Auto Service. As I'm going to leave quickly, and then you can sing anything you want. Tomorrow we're going to have editor of the Boston Globe, Brian Rigori, is going to be with us. We're also going to look at what worked and failed with the technology used in the Boston bombing manhunt. You can check us out 24/7 at wgbhnews.org/BPR. You can sing for the next 20 seconds.
And all.